Hey everybody, welcome to Season 1, Episode 3 of Clean Cut Casual, a podcast about board games, the people, and, well, more board games. I'm Ethan Schultz, the host and producer of the podcast. Hanging out with me tonight is a pretty decent-sized team, you know, the usual four. So if you guys want to go ahead and introduce yourselves, starting with Creepy Chris.
Chris Bettinger, a.k.a. Creepy Chris.
Ryan Hicks, AP... Whoa, geez, I already messed up. a.k.a. AP Chaos.
And I'm David Coppoletti, or just Dave.
So Dave is joining us from the West Side shop of Yada Quest. So he's in a foreign territory over here on the East Side in East Side Cards and Games, but we'll make sure that your boss doesn't hear this podcast and know that you're hanging out over here.
So I think he'd be okay with it. Just representing.
We'll have to squeeze in like an ad for Yada Quest in the middle of it.
Yeah.
It's just like Yada Quest, Yada Quest, Yada Quest.
Subliminal messaging. Like, what was that?
That's crazy. Nothing.
Yeah, like the first episode when we were just like subliminal messages to like East Side the whole time. We're just like, yeah, and East Side Cards and Games. Yeah.
It's 20% off.
20% off everything. Yeah. All right, well we're just gonna cut right to the chase. We just finished up a game of Conquest of Planet Earth. And we're going to dive right in.
The space alien game.
The space alien game. And we're going to dive right into talking about the gameplay, reviewing it, and other cool stuff about the game. So if you guys stick around, we'll lead right into that. Everybody, welcome back to Creepy Chris's Corner.
Creepy Chris.
Yeah. All right, so Conquest of Planet Earth, we just got done playing. It's you can either do it co-op or do it competitively. We played the game competitively. We had four players. You get to pick your race or faction, and there's, I think, a total of
ten
races for Conquest of Planet Earth. You draw them randomly, and they have... basically a strength, and then an intelligence, and then they have what their race bonuses does, which you use menace tokens to activate those abilities. The object of the game for what we were playing was to get 8 terror points, which is basically victory points. First one to 8 wins the game.
Well, first one to 8 victory points wins the game. How you get victory points in the game is really cool, because unlike other alien games that are out there, this is one where you actually play as the alien races trying to destroy the Earth. I mean, there's other alien games out there, like Cosmic Encounter, but you're all different factions fighting against each other. For this one, we are the ones trying to conquer planet Earth, which I think is a very, very fun theme.
Well, that, and plus, like, Cosmic Encounter, it's you making deals and backstabbing other players, while this one, it's us versus the board of humans versus each other for points-wise, which never seems to work out when we screw over one player and someone else still can get points anyway.
Definitely.
Damn David.
But there are three phases to the game. It's like the command phase, the action phase, the battle phase, and then the events phase, right, where you draw event cards.
Yeah, card phase.
Command phase is really interesting, because how's that work, Chris, with your command counters?
You have the numbers 2 through 6 for commands, and that's going to be the actions that you use for that turn. But then they also throw you an extra one, which has D6 on it, which you would roll a D6. If you roll a 1... if you use the D6, you get an extra menace token. Then you can roll again. However, if you roll a 1 again, you do not get an extra menace token. You only get 1 action, which would really suck.
Which happened twice.
Yes. Yeah. And whoever has the lowest action points is the one who actually gets to start the round, and then it goes clockwise from there. Once you use one of those that's not a D6, it goes into a separate pile. Then you have to use the rest of the numbers before you can reshuffle those back into your command deck.
So you have a limited resources of what actions, like what tokens, because there's a D6 and then actions 2 to 6.
Correct? Yes.
Like there'll be a token that says you get 3 action points this turn. Once you use that, you've used up that 3 action point token. So the more you're using your tokens, the less options you're going to have, because you have to use up all your tokens to get back all your tokens. If anyone's played El Grande, that has a similar mechanic of when you get to place out your Caballeros, is you get to place out action cards, and when you use all your action cards, then you get them all back. Also, in Kingsbird, the expansion, with using soldiers, same mechanic. And in Space Hulk, Death Angel, the card game, has a little bit of the same mechanic of using the same action card because you're kind of limited in what choices you have to make. But, you know, you want to save that six for when you really need to use it, yeah. Definitely.
Well, the action tokens also add, like, a really nice momentum to each round, like, turn round. Like, being able to do it where it's, like, the person who's taking the least actions goes first. So it seems like the first player does the quickest turn and then a little bit longer, and obviously the last person's taking the most turns with the highest vote. And because of that, it kind of creates, like, a momentum into the next turn, which then you start again. So, like, when it's that last player's turn, that's the longest term that all the other players are planning for the next turn.
Yep.
Which kind of gives a nice, it's like the person who's on the back end of the turns has the least advantage of planning, but has the advantage of responding, which kind of leads a nice playthrough. I mean, when I played it, I didn't even play the D6 a single time the whole time. I just played action ones, because the D6, half the times you guys rolled it, you got ones.
Yeah. And another cool thing about that is that you know, like, what other players have used, because that's open knowledge. So you're like, oh, there's no way he can get six actions this turn. So, you know, it's
unless
kind of a bluffing
mechanic. Unless
he
D6s up.
Yeah, unless he D6 up, definitely. But that's how the command works, and that's how the turn starts. Then it's your action phase. Action phase works very similar to a lot of other games. I'll reference Pandemic. Has everyone played Pandemic for the most part, or yeah. Anything similar? Well, Pandemic, you know, you have a certain number of actions, and you use those actions to complete different things in the turn. And that's what, that's how the Conquest of Planet Earth works. So pretty much one action point, you can move your saucer a space. One action point, you can bring a flying saucer back from your graveyard to your home base. Two actions will get you a menace point. And you can also use action points to use event cards in your hand to do different things.
And event cards are your intelligence.
Yeah, but you can use the action points to do as many things as you want. So, you know, let's say if you have six action points, you can move one, you can use those to move all ships if you want to. You can use action points as many times as you want for as many different things.
Or you can spend them to demolish locations and get points.
Yes, definitely.
Which is, if David wants to elaborate on his strategy here shortly about how that ended up causing him the victory in the game by just destroying the shit out of everything.
Strategy too, because it came out of nowhere. After the action phase, battles happen, because whenever you move into empty locations, you draw a card for that location. Then that tells you how many victory points, or in this game it's called terror points, because we're bad guys, which is great, how many terror points that location's worth, and it also shows how many fights are going to happen there. And if someone else wants to talk about how fights work, I think it's really fun and quick and hilarious how fights work in this game.
The fights are pretty cool. You have a stack of cards that represent the hazards that you face at locations. So if you're at a place that has three, are they called?
Resistance cards.
Yeah.
Resistance. If you show up at a place that has three resistance, and you flip over three cards. And they could be single units like tanks or a squadron of like jet fighters, or they could be heroes that give a bonus to the other cards you have. So we fought like a sheriff riding a tank at one point.
Or doubling this...
The base
point of a tank, so it was like 8 points right off back.
Yeah, because of the veteran.
Yeah.
And it can be risky, because if you draw heroes, it just adds a plus, and it adds a modifier. So if you get a tank that's like 6 strength, and then a hero plus 1 strength, another hero plus 2 strength, another hero plus 1 strength, all of a sudden you're fighting an extremely beefy tank.
Yeah. Those pesky humans.
And what's great about that is you can risk it, because in this game, if you roll a natural 6, you get a killing blow, and so even if you're outnumbered, you still have a chance to destroy the humans.
Because when you roll the die, you just add it to your strength, because each one of your ships counts as a different type of strength. Like if your race has 2 strength, each one of your ships is 2 strength.
Yes.
So if you have 3 ships on a space, you know, 3 times 2, you get 6 right there. And then if you're fighting against something that has 8 strength, you know, those are your base strengths. And then you just roll D6 and you add the totals to each one. Whoever has the highest wins. But whoever rolls a 6, disregard all that. If you roll a 6, that's a crushing defeat, definitely.
Did that even happen during our game? Did anybody have a crushing defeat?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, humans did, and I think aliens did at one point.
Okay, I didn't remember that happening.
And people that don't like randomness may not be a big fan of that particular mechanic, or the fact that you're constantly drawing cards and stuff like that. You know, you got to have the right group, because it is definitely really, really fun when you have the right group and we're all having a blast with it. And, because a 6, man, you want to go... Sometimes you'll just go into a fight hoping you roll a 6, because that's a crushing defeat.
And then there are event cards inside the game, and that you get as many event cards as your intelligence. So if you had 4 intelligence, you get 4 event cards. Event cards can be used in multiple different ways. There's ones that have play immediately, which for our case, I think we had a one that was something about technology, but you got a space stuff, which is usually, you know, weapons. I think there were some that gave you more command, more intelligence.
Some just gave you points straight up.
Yeah, straight terror points. And then there was ones that gave you a straight one or plus one strength. And then there's cards that you can keep and screw other players. Like there's one that if they're going to win, you can play the card and it makes them tie, so they have to re-roll. I think David played one that made, instead of fighting 3 separate fights and 1 resistance, you added them all together. So you had to do one huge giant fight that would be like plus 14.
16. Yeah, I was fighting plus 16.
Which got thwarted immediately.
Yeah, I had a card called Contagion that I could roll a die for every single resistance card. If I rolled a 4 or higher, they were immediately destroyed because of the disease and pestilence bomb I just dropped on all of them.
Which I think you rolled a 4 for every single card.
Yes. So I destroyed it all and the fight was over. So it was great.
Damn, weighted dice. Baloney.
So we did the battle phase, and then the event phase is when you draw back up to your intelligence with event cards.
And you can discard a card, too, if you feel like it's not useful.
And play just keeps going like this until one person accumulates 8 terror points, and as soon as you get 8 terror points, the game is over. And tell them how you accumulated 8 terror points.
Okay. Well, normally you get conquest tokens for defeating locations, so you leave those behind. And that's, I guess, the normal way to win, is just to go against more challenging locations.
Yes.
And get more terror points that way, by conquering those locations. But some, I guess some of the races have abilities they can use to give them terror points. Like mine, my race had an ability called Raise the Earth or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Like
Scorched Earth.
Scorched Earth.
So they basically demolish locations using their menace tokens. Sound effects for added realism.
Yes.
But exactly. You get, my race got terror points for demolishing locations. So I just went around blowing up locations. That's how I snuck a victory in.
Yeah, because normally.
Damn, teleporting.
Yeah, and he had teleporting pants, so he could teleport somewhere and then destroy the location and get victory points for it. It was great. Because normally, you don't want things to be destroyed. It's just not worth any points anymore because you're not terrifying any of the inhabitants anymore. But
right. You're taking points away from you and the other players, the possibility to get.
Exactly. It's like a last, like I played a nuke to get rid of a location worth a lot of victory points for Dave. And it hurt him a little bit, but he was still kind of happy that it was destroyed. Definitely. So.
Because demolished locations are usually worth 0 terror points.
Yes.
But in David's case, they're worth 1. Because of his faction or race.
Why didn't you teleport to the center of the board and just demolish the main location?
It has to be population 1 for you to be able to build.
Oh, okay.
So I was going to all like the abandoned locations or the small cities or whatever.
Does that have population 5?
Yeah. Yes.
Because if you can take over that one, you're just a bam.
You're the boss.
Yeah, it's really hard to take that over. I've tried almost every game, and it's like, yeah. Oh, last fight, I'm dead.
I felt like through our experience just playing it now, like there wasn't a lot of inter-combat in between players. I mean, like, we did more than enough. Instant speed card,
event
screw course. Up your hands with events and whatnot, but I feel like the only combat that happened between players were you and I, Ryan.
Yeah, I don't think it's all about, you know, combating each other, because we're all just trying to destroy the same Earth. It's just we want to see who can do it faster. So it's more of we're playing plots against each other to try and thwart each other's plans instead of directly getting involved with each other. Because you can get directly involved with each other, but you kind of want to be in your own separate little pockets of your areas because you have more of an opportunity to get more terror points for looking at locations in your area.
Yeah, I feel like those teleportation pants that David had gotten were, like, ridiculous.
They were ridiculous.
Because if we all would have stuck with the strategy of just, like, picking up the locations beside our spawn point in the center, then you obviously were great distances away from each other, which David could just be like, oh, teleport and just demolish your shit. Teleport, demolish your shit. Teleport, repeat process, you know, and kind of get across the entire board.
And anyone who's listening to this podcast right now, make sure you just go to Board Game Geek and look at the pictures for this game so you can see kind of what we're talking about with the board. The board's really cool. It's like for 4 players, it's 5 boards put together, and each board has 7 spaces for cards.
Yeah.
Has 7
sticks around the outside, 1 in the center.
Yeah, exactly. I guess exactly 6 spaces for cards because the middle is like your landing zone. And each space where you could put a location card is pretty much a space that you move to it. So it's actually a really, really unique board, actually.
There's not strange too many. We didn't get any forests, I don't think.
We didn't. We have one.
There's one.
Right in front of me.
Right in front of him.
And those are 0/0s. I think the first game I ever played in that game was... I filled my entire board up with nothing but forest.
Yeah. And I had hard cities anything. Beside me.
Dude, you're like
I was like destroyed every turn.
So I think that's one thing that makes the game push to, you know, get to the center is there's usually more forests that come out and they're not worth anything. Except in David's case, they'd be worth gold. So
yeah, that's the other thing. He could reap the benefits of zero locations. So do we want to turn into our rating scale? Review the 6.5 scale.
Well, that needs to be fixed.
We rate on a 6.5 scale, by the way. Because 5 doesn't do it justice, and 10 is just a load of crap.
We should do 7.5. I mean, that's a nice C.
We already started with 6.5. If we change it, like, we'd have to readjust everything we've already rated on that
which
scale.
Which was only one game.
It's so fine.
And why, that was Flashpoint, wasn't it?
It was, which got a 6.
So I'll give a couple stats about the game real quick.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay.
We need to talk about the artwork and...
Artist is Jack Scott Hill, and designer is Jason C. Hill. I wonder if they're brothers. I never knew that.
That's cute.
But anyway, it was published in 2011. It was 1 to 4 players. Playing time is about 60 minutes or 20. This is just
we probably played for an hour.
Yeah, definitely.
Which means that it stood up to its actual time, unlike Fury of Dracula, which took like twice as long for us to play.
Category, it's horror, miniatures, science fiction, mechanics, action point allowance system, area control, area influence, because you're really trying to take over parts on the map, area movement, you're moving zones, cooperative gameplay. Oh, that's another thing. If you want to play this game, well, no, you said that already. Yeah. We never played this game cooperatively yet, but you can actually play this game cooperatively, which I'd really be interested in checking out sometime. Dice rolling, modular board, and variable player powers, which is one of my absolute... favorite mechanics in any game is when players...
And for people that love theme for games, Flying Frog Productions gives you a CD for this game that you can play along with.
An unnecessary CD that just adds
music.
Awesomeness to
it.
Yes. It's not needed, but it brings awesome.
Especially for Touch of Evil, when the first track, they're like, murder! Bong, bong, bong.
And one guy we didn't see in the game was Captain Fantastic.
Whoa.
He's the big honcho hero.
Yeah, he's not fun at all.
But we did not see him in that game, thank God.
So, before we get into the ratings, do you want to see who we think this would actually appeal to? Like, what audiences? Anybody have any suggestions?
People that love games that require... they just want theme. The game's got theme written all over it.
Yeah, the theme was outstanding.
Obviously, if you're a sci-fi guy, it'd bring you in. I think it's a pretty easy game. I would say it would almost be on the verge of like a later aged, maybe like a 8-year-old up kind of game that you could introduce kids to.
Yeah, it says 12 and up, but that's mostly just because you want to determine who you're playing with and if they think like the pictures would be scary or anything like that. And really, the artwork in this game looks like old, like 1950s. Yeah. Like, it's awesome. Comic book art. It's great.
Mars
1970s.
Attacks.
Yeah, Mars Attacks and everything.
Like appropriateness, 12. 10 plus.
Yeah. But if, complexity.
Like, yeah, understanding capabilities, you could probably get away.
There is an extensive use of text. You know, if you're reading cards and stuff like that. So.
Yeah. But I mean, it took us two turns really to get it underway on like, okay, this is when things can be played, this is when things don't get played.
Definitely. I'm just saying you want to be able to read well.
You have to be literate.
Well, you know, 6 to 8.
But I don't think the game's too graphic with the drawings. It's obviously all made for
silliness and fun,
and it's got great artwork to it. By the way, the cards are hilarious. There's a card called
Eatin' Kittens,
and it's a big giant alien eating a kitten.
One thing to mention: this is I think Flying Frog's only game that doesn't use live actors for their artwork.
Yes.
Yeah,
I think that's correct.
Really?
Only game.
What other games have they produced?
Touch of Evil that has live actors.
Fortune and
Glory has live actors.
Last Night on Earth
has live actors. There was another game that's like Last Night on Earth, but it's Martians attacking.
Yeah, it's the one Z was talking about last time.
That uses live actors.
Did they have like a Cabin in the Woods style game too, or something like that, like some kind of murder?
Murder!
Boom! Boom!
They might have. They don't have too many games, but
I can't think of any other games.
I can't think of that. But the artwork is fantastic. It's super fun. Every time you draw a card, you just like...
And the names of the cards are funny, too.
Yeah.
Teleportation pants.
But yeah, I would think it would go towards...
People really like to play cards on each other when they think that they've won something.
I feel, yes. For me, it would be, if you enjoy playing a Cosmic Encounter, you will enjoy playing it.
Yes, there's a lot of those.
There's a very strong similarity in between it.
Yeah.
From playing cards for combat, playing cards for jumping other players, moving models.
So, 6.5 scale? What's an average? 3.25?
3.25!
Good lord.
Since it's my game I own, obviously I think it's great. I wouldn't say it's as good as Flashpoint, since that's the only other game we've reviewed, but I would honestly give the game a 5. I think for the time frame that you can play it and how quick it can be with only 2 players, it's a hilarious game, and it's a great filler if someone's setting up a big boy game, and it's loads of fun, and it's just meant to have fun, so I'd give it a 5.
That's another good thing you brought up, too, because this is the first 4-player game I've played of this game. And we're normally just played 2-player games, you and me, Chris. And I had equally as much fun playing 2 players as we did playing 4 players. Because don't you have to get more terror points?
You get the same amount of terror points, but there's less boards.
There's less boards,
so there's 3 boards for 2 players. So, you obviously, if you start getting 4-ish, you don't have a lot of options.
It's just like boom, boom,
for the middle.
Boom.
So it scales the player quality.
Yes.
Really well.
And then if you play co-op, the only thing that changes with co-op is how many terror points you actually have to get. If you play with 4 people, I think it's 32 terror points you have to get.
Because you're all collectively getting terror points.
And then there's a human event tracker, I believe, too, for the game. Which, again, we've never played that, so I really can't justify giving a scale for the co-op.
With that knowledge of having only played it, I think I'm going to agree with you and give it a 5. My only worry about it was how well it scaled to lower quantity numbers of players. And especially for when it comes to like purchasing and owning games, I want to get games that I can play with 2 players, or I can get games that I can play with like more quantity of players. And usually a lot of games nowadays have a tendency of like fitting either the higher or the lower, and don't really mesh really well in between. So
like, oh, it's fun if you have 4 people.
Yeah. And speaking
like,
of that,
oh,
if people are like,
say
oh,
2 to 4,
why is it
on the
only 4
box?
Players? Flying Frog Productions is making an expansion for this game this year that's supposed to come out. I hope it comes out this year, which is going to add 5 to 6 players.
That's
so
one reason why they don't
game,
make that many games either, because they have a boatload of expansions
yes.
for all their games that they
this
have.
This is the first time they've made one for Conquest of Planet Earth,
yep.
which is it's overdue, honestly.
Just so I don't sound like the same as everyone else, I'm going to give it a 5.5.
Ooh.
Also, because I won, so I'll give it an extra 5.5.
Or
it's really
5.15.
we're not going to bastardize the scale that much.
But it was fun, easy to pick up, and it was thematic, like you said. So
I'm going to give it a 5 also. Really enjoyed this game. This is one game Chris showed me a while ago, and I instantly like got giddy over it. You know, we were playing at my house,
yeah.
and I was loving it because, I mean, the 6s were making me crack up, too, because there was a lot. The first game we played, there was a lot of crushing victories, and at first I was like, is that how it works? And then the more I played it, you know, it really affects how you play, because it's like, well, maybe I'll be able to take this over if I roll a 6, and it's funny, because as soon as you think that will work, you just get destroyed.
You roll a 1.
Yeah. But I really, really enjoyed it. It has a lot of good mechanics. Very easy to pick up. Very easy to play. Rulebook's very nice. Has a little FAQ in the rulebook, just like Flying Frog does. And it does, you know, if you have a group that likes thematic stuff, it oozes with theme. You can really have a fun time with it. So I enjoy it thoroughly.
Cool. So that is Conquest of Planet Earth. If you guys ever show up at Eastside Games and Cards on a Wednesday night, most of the time we usually have our game collection and just request it if you want to play it, and I'm sure we'd be down to squeeze in an hour and play it. So we're going to now lead into our most expected games of 2013. If you guys are
I guess I'll start off with the games that I'm most excited about for 2013. I actually have 3. I have Kingdom Death, Z-Pocalypse, and then a game that hopefully is going to come out called Dark, Darker, and Darkest. All three of these games were actually up for best of 2013 off of Board Game Geek. However, only one of them made it into the top 20 most anticipated games for 2013, which was obviously Kingdom Death, which was number two. Kingdom Death Monster of the Game is on my list because I think and believe the concept that Adam Poots, I hope I'm pronouncing your last name right, came up with this. It's something unique with a really beautiful style of miniatures that have been sculpted by many artists. One that everyone in the gaming community is probably noticing more and more is Cool Mini or Not. They actually made a pinup one for him. And Kingdom Death is a miniature board game set in a dark, evil world where humans are not at the top of the food chain. In fact, at the bottom. The game is set up in darkness, where death is certain for humans due to the monsters in the darkness. Name of the game is to be working together in the dark. It's a co-op game where it's simply to survive from endless encounters of monsters who will come across in the vast darkness of the Kingdom Death. In my mind, the game is like a hybrid. It's a mixture of a tabletop game with a board game with a little essence of an RPG. I really can't wait to see what this is, and it arrives on my doorstep in December, hopefully, because I kickstarted it off Kickstarter.
And it was also one of the most successful Kickstarter projects to ever exist.
Not one, the.
It is
it made $2 million. Over $2 million within,
They were, I want to say... Their project was up for a while, though.
Yeah, almost seven or 8 months, something like that, I want to say.
But they also had a shit ton of like bonus material.
Yes. This Adam Poots, actually, this is going to be self-published. I guess he is an artist of some type, a really big board game enthusiast, and he just happens to know people that liked his concept and idea. And I mean, there are tons, like literally the top sculptors from around the world have sculpted miniatures for this game, which is awesome.
And they look outstanding.
Yeah, every single one of them looks ridiculous. What makes the game so unique and interesting, besides how beautiful and elegant all the pieces look, is just the genre and what he's going for the dark, just as dark as you could possibly think, where humans are nothing, they know nothing, they have no,
like
history.
Cattle.
Yeah,
it's
they're
really
basically
like raising cattle, and then the monsters are devouring them.
Yeah, and
really
cool. The opening thing on Kickstarter for him was basically just a man with a lantern that was trying to survive. He didn't want to die as he's watching all these other humans around him just getting eaten and killed. And so he finds a piece of concrete or glass or something that's sharp enough and decides to defend himself. And that's how the exploration of the game starts. Just looks amazing. I can't wait for it, honestly.
Compare it to one of your favorite video games.
Ooh.
You know which one.
I don't know which one.
Monster Hunter.
Yeah, I guess it would be Monster Hunter.
You're making armor from the enemies you're killing.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. As you progress through the game and actually kill one of the monsters, you get loot items from them. And those loot items associate with some of the armor kits that you can buy for your characters. And you can either, if you're a really good sculptor and really good at putting miniatures together, you can actually just hybrid your own craft and pretty much make whatever weapons you want to add to them, whatever armor kit you want to put on them, so you can have just a mixture of all of them. Or you can get basically a kind of like how most miniatures games now come with a preset of plastic and what you put on them, you can have that too. But if you want to get all crazy and you're skilled at doing it, you can just pretty much put whatever you want. So
good
as you
magnets.
Progress,
yeah.
Yes,
oh, yeah. Magnets.
That's the thing for magnets. Definitely. Yeah. Is that game come in box like a campaign style?
Yes.
I know you could continue sessions from one session to another, but I didn't know if it was actually like a campaign that you played or if it was just
like
small
like
combat sequences.
Yeah, it's boss. It's all based on bosses, but yeah, there's a campaign for it, and like why it has an RPG aspect to it in my mind is you get a character sheet, and then as you've defeated monsters, you put your stats on it, and you would pick what armor kits you took and what skills those actually give you or what attributes they give you, and then as you progress, you would change it along. And what's real cool is the fighting style of the game is if you're fighting, they show a video of a lion. If you're behind him and you're hitting him from behind, you're actually doing more damage because he doesn't see you, and you're actually hitting those locations. Like, you're not just, it's not random, which is really cool. And there hasn't been much. I think there's 3 videos up on Kickstarter for it, so once I get the game, we'll actually see the full motion of how a turn works and how damage all it works.
It'll definitely have a review when, like, you know, Clean Cut Casual season 2 episode what 6?
Something
7 sometime around that time frame for December.
That's enough on Kingdom Death.
Is it coming out this year or next?
It comes out this year for Kickstarter people. So it comes out at the end of 2013, which I think it comes out in December.
For the people who are special. Meaning that if you're listening to this and you have no idea what the game is, it's not a 2013 game.
It's already too late.
They're going to try to make just the core set available in December as well.
Like fourth quarter.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're trying to get the game out, but everyone that Kickstarted it is going to get their stuff in December. Because you can already buy some of the miniatures that they have done off their website. Right, you just wouldn't have the game. But so that's what they're trying for as well. But I'll have all the bonuses because I bought like all the expansions, I think, and a couple of the characters. I spent a lot of money on
$500 deep in Kickstarter.
Yeah. So the other game that I'm really super excited for is Zepocalypse. Apparently a theme with us. We love zombies. I love zombies.
Zombies are the shit.
So this is a zombie game in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. This game sets itself apart from other zombie games in my mind because it's based on the survival of your players. Instead of just running around and getting an objective and living, you're actually trying to survive the zombie attacks. You start the game in either like a bunker or some other building that you've actually had, that you've bunkified, I guess you could use it as. So how the turns works, you start the game in the bunker. When daylight comes, you go out for scavenging for items. You need food, weapons, and you find other survivors out in this new world. If you don't find enough food for the characters that you have, because if there's four players, like there is around this table, you can have as many characters as you want, as long as you can feed them. If you can't feed them, they're gonna die. So you have to balance out who you find, what attributes they're bringing to your group, and what you actually think they'll be doing for you for the style that you're playing, whether you're going to be defending and putting, you know, barbed wire, putting some doors back up, putting traps for zombies, or you're going to go for a guy that's just straight up killing.
Because you have one miniature that represents your whole gang.
Yes.
In that game, which is pretty cool. Like, everyone in your group, like, adds all their dice together.
So you control as many players as you can feed. However, if there's a large group, that means there's more food you must find. And what's cool is once you come back and everyone's scavenged, like, if you found a weapon, and, like, say Ryan doesn't have any weapons, but he's found a lot of food, I can be like, dude, I'll give you this weapon if you give me one of those canned food so I can feed one of my people, because you really need a weapon. You'd be like, all right, man, that's cool. I'll do that trade. So just because you don't find everything you need doesn't mean you can't trade with the other players. And the game's completely co-op, but you get points on building defenses, killing zombies, and how well you are at scavenging, I think.
It has a victory
point. It has a victory point. Yeah. Track. That's your experience. Yeah, track. So there can't be like one true, like, winner. I'm the best survivor.
What's going to be awesome about that game is it's finally a zombie-themed game that's a little bit, it's more targeted towards like a big boy play the game. Like, I mean, it's not going to be crazy ridiculous, you know, in the learning curve, but it's definitely a lot more complicated than majority of the zombie-based themed board games that currently exist in the market.
And it's along the, I think it's along more lines of, like, compared to, like, you know, like Fallout, kind of, where, like, everything is completely annihilated, where in Zombicide, it's like, you know, civilization has failed, things are messed up, but in Zepocalypse, it's like, the cover's, like shit hits ruined the fan. Everything. It's like a nuclear holocaust, almost,
with,
you know, zombie stuff.
You only have a few hours of sunlight until the attacks happen again. Will the zombies make it into your camp, or will you live to see another day and fight for survival? You fortify where you're staying. The game has elements of co-op, combat, resource collecting, and so much more. This game just absolutely looks amazing. I mean, we had a chance to play it last year at Gen Con. I absolutely loved every single minute of it. I don't know if the other three people that played it with me enjoyed it as much as I did, but I mean, the game is just absolutely oozing with the zombie theme, and I love that it's a post-apocalyptic world. What the hell would you do if there's nothing but zombies and you don't have any survivors and you're just literally playing the game to survive from day to day?
It has tower defense mechanics. It's awesome. Like, because whenever you're out scavenging looking for food, which the scavenging's really cool because you just draw cards and it's like a little story of what happened, and then you roll a check to see if you got to draw food, and cool. And you also find scrap. And with scrap, you can build, like, walls. You can, like, put barbed wire in places. You can build pits so zombies fall in them. You can board up windows. You can turn it into a grate so you can shoot through it, but it still stops the zombies.
Cool.
It's really, really cool.
Yeah, there's... Oh, God, it's just oozing and oozing with theme.
And you're all, like, in, like... It's you're bunkered down. Like, I think I explored a little bit, and I was like, oh! Because you're drawing tiles, Remember, you can draw the second entrance to the bunker.
Yes.
And, like, all of a sudden the zombies want to go a different way instead of to the other way.
And so, there's, you can travel through sewers.
Yeah.
If they come up, which is awesome. It's really cool. Then you could really be
yeah. Yeah. It's bad.
The last game I just kind of wanted to mention. It's a game that I read a while ago. And it's had information on Board Game Geek forever. I believe it's been on their site for, like, 2 years. And it has nothing really on it. There's no Kickstarter for it. It's just waiting to be published is what it looks like. And the game's called Dark, Darker, and Darkest. And this is straight off of Board Game Geek. It's an intense cooperative survival horror game in which a team of urban survivors try to fight the darkness in an unsettling location. The House of Dr. Mortimer, which holds the antidote to a virus turning the world into an army of the undead. Players must gather the optimal tools to open doors, control destructive fires that slowly destroy the locations of the game, and battle the endless hordes of terrifying creatures that will do anything to slaughter this fragile group. While out seeking lurking creatures in the eye of the ever-present security cameras guarding the secrets of the house. The artwork for this game looks really dark and neat. That's actually what drew me to it when I first saw it.
I hope it's dark.
Yes. Is it dark? Is it the darker or is it the darkest?
It is all three.
Can you see them? Like, damn.
It's really dark.
It's actually gloss black printed on top of matte black.
No, the just, picture of the box is just like this really weird deformed looking little girl, and then it fades to far back and it's just this really dark looking house. It's, I don't know. It appealed to me. I don't know why.
Creepy Chris going for the game with the little girl on the cover.
Deformed.
All right, so and I guess...
That's my three games that I can't wait for.
Hell yeah. I guess we'll lead into mine, which surprisingly I actually have zero zombie games on my list.
That's dark, darker, darkest.
Well, the first one on my list is pretty dark. So, first thing I'm most excited for right now coming out in 2013 is the remake of Letters from Whitechapel. Why? Because that game is outstanding, and I don't want to spend $130 to buy it off Amazon. Because it was originally printed by... Do you know who originally printed it?
No, I do not, actually.
You know what a board game geek?
Yeah, I'm doing it right now. Fantasy Flight's doing the reprint, which
yes,
is...
Yeah, Fantasy Flight is awesome. Doing
yeah, they said they're not changing that much, but they're just, you know... making the components better.
Right. And it's like $38 if you get it from Cool Stuff Inc.
And producing it for cheaper, yeah. When's that supposed to come out?
It doesn't. I think it's reading like
it
second quarter.
It doesn't come out ever. It'll yes, never it come out.
Cool Stuff Inc. just takes your money and then
oh,
never
I thought of my other
sheet.
Game 2013, Kemet.
Oh, yeah.
It's not Kemet. Out yet. Kemet looks freaking awesome.
It's available for Clint to pre-order.
I know. Yeah.
Anyway.
Just throwing that out there.
To resource back to my game. So, Letters of Whitechapel. The theme is based on Jack the Ripper in...
he probably did that, too.
Is he farting? Because I win.
The theme is 1888 London, Jack the Ripper. The game takes about 90 minutes to 150 minutes or so. But it's pretty much a all-versus-one circumstance. The players who are not playing as Jack the Ripper play as the police force during the 1880s, and they're trying to hunt down Jack the Ripper through this... largely immense board of streets and locations that you can move to, and then Jack the Ripper, similar to Fury of Dracula, makes his movements secretly. I don't remember if he does it by cards or if he does it actually on like a pad of paper himself, but really the main reason why I'm excited for it is because it looks sweet and the theme is awesome, but it's $130 on Amazon, which is a little too much for my pocket, especially when we earn $0 on a podcast.
Nexus Games.
Originally it was
yeah,
Nexus.
They used to have relations with Fantasy Flight.
Okay.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
No, the game does look amazing. I was reading about it a little bit the other day, since you mentioned it, I think, last time we were doing the podcast. And it does look really neat. The board is super cool.
Anything deduction is awesome.
Yeah. So, well, I think my anticipation for Letters from Whitechapel is what caused me to buy Fury of Dracula. They have very many similarities in between the two. It's just one plays in a lot shorter time frame than the other one, but has additional elements of like event cards and tactics that both Dracula and the players can play. And the combat system in Fury obviously is pretty different than Letters from Whitechapel. So yeah. That's Letters from Whitechapel. You can pre-order it right now on Cool Stuff Inc. It comes out in the second quarter.
I think that's what it's shooting for. At least says
they're ranked almost exactly the same too.
The
Fury of Dracula and Letters of Whitechapel.
That's cool.
Yeah, they're like right next to each other.
Hell yeah,
pretty cool.
And then my second game, I'm actually excited for, which I'm actually going to be kicking it tomorrow. I have decided that I'm going to be funding the money into it because it's worth the $40. And it's actually the game Compounded. And Compounded is actually a game about building chemical compounds through careful management of elements. There's a decent amount of social play and trading, but a lot of it is kind of just based on luck pulling elements out of a bag. I was bad at science in high school, but I like the theme of this game. It seems extremely different to a lot of the games I've seen. I like the simplicity of the art design and how it's created, where you're actually pulling elemental resources and then trying to complete compounds and kind of like the lab table in the center to earn points, and you can work with other players to complete. I don't know, the theme in it's just outstanding.
And you can trade too, right?
You're right, you can trade supplies.
You love the science themes of inventions.
Nefarious!
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But it's a, I don't know, it's just the element of also having to, like, you're getting resources to accomplish compounds for points, but you're also getting resources to load up your fire hydrant, to run your fire burner, to purchase goggles, and, like, there's so many other elements that are, like, very thematic into being a chemist that apply, that you're actually using your resources as in, like, managing for points or managing to make sure you don't lose your points due to, like, explosions in your lab.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's sweet. The game is by...
Kickstarter is hard to remember because a lot of them are new upstarts, definitely. Yeah.
Or self.
No, the person who made it has made a couple other games. Huh. But it's a Kickstarter game. You can kick it for U.S. shipping at $42. And I think they just reached 50,000 awesome. a couple days ago, and they still have about 14 days to go. I know if you kickstart it, it gets shipped out, I believe, in August. And I'm hoping it doesn't get delayed because I'm all about immediate satisfaction. So those are my two games, Letters from Whitechapel and Compounded. Definitely check one out on Kickstarter and pre-order the other one, and they'll be coming out soon.
I'm looking forward to a lot of new Shadowrun stuff that's coming out this year. They're doing a skirmish-based miniatures game.
Oh, my gosh.
A deck-building game, a Euro-style game, and there's two computer games. And then there's the 5th edition rule set for Shadowrun that's coming out, too. But I guess I'm looking forward to the skirmish-based miniatures game the most.
Is it, like, putting together miniatures, or is it going to be boxes that you buy?
It's going to be minis from Cool Mini or Not.
Wow, they are really...
So, man, they are just they're going doing everywhere. Man.
I'm not sure if they're going to do them in boxes, like in kits that you assemble. It's called Sprawlgangers, so it's like a cyberpunk world, and you're controlling your own gang of bikers that you put together. Fucking Sprawlgangers. I just dropped an F-bomb.
No, that's okay. No, it has to do with that.
But
oh, God. That's so sweet.
That sounds
I guess you pick different awesome. Factions. You want to play, like, the Halloweeners or the... Rusty Stilettos or whatever.
And it sounds like the Warrior.
It sounds like it's going to be point value based, so you assemble like a small group of skirmishers and you do battle on the streets.
So it sounds pretty similar to a War Machine. Well, I guess yeah. Warhammer
if,
the same
if,
way.
If anyone doesn't know what Shadowrun is, just like, it's a really, 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 it's been a long running RPG for a while now, too.
Yeah.
And the coolest thing about it is that it's fantasy and and like near like I said, you know, futuristic with cyberpunk. So like there'll be an ogre like chill as a bouncer to a bar. Like it'll be a legit ogre.
Yeah.
And it's really cool because it's such a cool, unique, you know, it's mixing technology with magic. So, you know, like you might be a detective and you can cast spells.
Yeah.
So it's really, really cool world.
But hopefully you'll be able to augment your different gangers. I think that'd be really cool. Like, give them upgrades and different equipment. Right now, there's not too much information available about it, but it is coming out in 2013.
Do you know which quarter of 2013 it comes out in?
I don't think so. It was one of the first ones they listed, so.
Who makes Shadowrun then? I always forget. Who's
Catalyst?
Catalyst.
They do BattleTech.
Yes.
And I think Leviathans came out with.
Oh, yeah. Leviathans was really cool looking. The big airship battle game.
Yeah.
That looks awesome.
But aside from the Shadowrun stuff, I'm excited about the X-Wing miniatures expansion for the Slave One and the Millennium Falcon. Those are going to be
awesome.
And you did a preview event for that for Millennium Falcon, didn't you?
Yeah,
the
Kessel Run event
yeah.
at Yata Quest.
I checked that out.
And the ships look really sweet.
Paul
like
was
they're
mad
all
that you didn't do that. Tell him about that, by the way.
Oh.
Stick.
But the ships are made to scale, like the. the designers of the game and the sculptors and stuff, they paid a lot of attention to the how big each ship is compared
to
the other ships. So they're all, like, perfectly scaled and really detailed.
And the rule book actually shows people went and, like, looked at the old, like, movie models.
Dug
like,
talked
with, like, you know, yeah, they went to the archives and, you know, went to Lucasfilm and everything to make this miniatures game.
It's great game.
Well, yeah, you don't want to ruin that license.
No, exactly. Like, they're doing everything in their
power. Have a Star Wars license, you're taking every single possible option you could to make sure it's right.
Yeah. And I guess I'm excited about the Edge of the Empire role-playing game, too.
Me too. I really want to play that.
I haven't tried out the beginner box. But those are the games I'm excited about in 2013.
One of the main games I'm excited for in 2013 is actually a Kickstarter. It looks awesome. I didn't actually get the Kickstarter it, which is kind of a bummer, but I'm still definitely going to be picking it up, is Rivet Wars. And Rivet Wars, it's a two-player miniatures game. It could go up to four, though, if you want it to. It's like a World War I alternate reality miniatures game. They really don't call them, you know, they're not called the Germans, they're not called Americans, but they are called, like, the Allies, and then the, I forget what it is, but it's like the Empire, pretty much. And really, that looks like Nazis and looks like the Allies. But it's cool because all the artwork in it, it almost looks like, not exactly a chibi design, but, like, they all look super deformed, like little dudes. And pretty much the whole concept was that it was all started by one picture that this artist made, and he just drew a picture of a rivet, and he's like, huh. He put a couple arms on it and legs, and it made it look like a little dude. So the dudes look like little rivets walking. And it's like steampunk, definitely. There's a lot of, it's what if technology didn't advance in the way as in, you know, electricity. So, you know, there's a lot of diesel engine. There's a lot of steam-powered stuff. There's big rivets in all the machines. Then there's actually walker tanks, like big walkers. It's kind of similar to Dust in a way, but a much lighter theme. One reason why I really thought this game looked cool is because, you know, I have a son, and anytime I find something that I think that he would be able to play and grasp too, I always hop all over it because it's really fun. And the miniatures look incredible. That's a cool mini or not also.
Yep.
They're doing the miniatures for that. But it just finished kickstarting. It grossed $546,000. They had a Blitzkrieg level that came with, like, $560 worth of stuff. They went nuts. Came with, like, double infantry, double tanks, 10 more heroes, or something like that. It was a lot of heroes, aircraft. But everyone's getting that, which is good. All the core games will have actual plastic, like, everything that was going to be, like, a little, like, cardboard chit for a bunker is now a plastic bunker in the game. And, like, damage counters now, all the miniatures in the game have slots on the back that you can slot a damage counter in. And they're plastic damage counters to see, like, how much damage your hero has taken. One cool mechanic about it is that it has the plug system to where if you buy a hero, it comes with a little plug version of the hero. So if you wanted to field the hero, you know, he's out there, you know, commanding his troops, giving him better bonuses. Or if you wanted to be in a tank, you put the plug in the tank. So it's like he's in the tank, like, commanding stuff.
Absolutely.
And you can also buy turret plugs, where, like, all of a sudden your tank has, like, a rocket launcher. Your tank has a Tesla coil on it. So it's very, very interesting how that's working. And it uses a dice mechanic of pretty much you just rolling successes. Like, let's say if your guy gets to roll five dice and you're shooting into a square that has four units, you're only attacking one unit. So you just having five dice gives you a better probability of hitting that one unit, which is kind of nice. That means that you can't wipe out a whole square. And, like, there's different attacks that can do it, but you just for normal attacks you can't. But pretty much fives and sixes are successes, like a lot of games are doing these days, definitely. But that looks really good. So you can check it out. Most of the information's if you type in Rivet Wars on Kickstarter, you can see everything about the game. There's a 42-minute video of a full game of the first scenario, and it uses victory points. So you actually get victory point cards, a lot like Star Trek Fleet Captains, where you get, like, victory point cards each turn, and you draw, and you're kind of changing your strategy and tactics. Like, you might have a card that's, like, kill three units in one turn, you get a point. Then it'll be, like, make sure none of your units die this turn, you get a point. And so it's constantly changing your strategies, which is really cool. Another game I'm really excited for is called Kemet. And what Kemet is, it's made by who's one of my favorite companies lately, Asmodee Games. Asmodee's been chunking out some really, really good stuff. I mean, they did the reprint of Formula Day, which is a blast. Formula D is great. And they did Seasons last year, which was super fun. but I'll talk about Kemet real quick. In Kemet, players each represent an Egyptian tribe and will use the mystical powers of the gods of ancient Egypt, along with their powerful armies, to score points in glorious battles and through invasion of rich territories. The conquest for the land of Kemet takes place over two phases, day and night. During the day, choose an action amongst the 9 possible choices provided by your player mat and perform it immediately. Once every player has taken 5 actions, night falls, with players gathering prayer points from their temples, drawing divine intervention cards, and determining turn order for the start of the new day. As the game progresses, they can use prayer points to enroll magical creatures and have them join their troops. In addition to intimidating enemies, these creatures provide special powers. Expect to see a lot of detailed components as Manigot's Cycloids to represent armies and immortals. Cycloids, definitely one of my favorite games. Really, really like Cycloids, made by Bruno Cathalia. Really, really good game designer. He doesn't have anything to do with Kemet, but it is the same company that made Cycloids is doing all the components for Kemet. So it's going to be a huge board, tons of different sculpts for all the different armies, big, huge scorpion men, and it's really cool because you pretty much, you know, put your action, like it's, you know, putting your actions of what actions you want to take place. And one cool thing, you know, it's a kind of a light war game to where everyone has a city they control, and everyone's cities, how the board looks, you got to look at the board, look at some pictures. Everyone's cities are the exact same distance apart from each other, how they designed it, so no one has an advantage. So that looks really cool. And the two other things I'm going to touch on are just expansions I'm excited for. Arkham Horror is one of my favorite universes. I'm sure the more we do this, the more you're going to see Cthulhu and Arkham Horror stuff trickle into things, I say. But Call of the Wild expansion for Mansions of Madness just came out. Looks incredible because Mansions of Madness is a really, really good thematic, you know, mystery horror board game. And for all the games of Mansions of Madness, it's been a little bit linear. Like, it doesn't break the game at all. It's fantastic. But with Call of the Wild, it doesn't take place in mansions anymore. It takes place outside. And they have completely nonlinear storylines for the scenarios, which is something really unique to Mansions. That's going to be really incredible. Nice. And then Elder Sign, another Arkham Horror game, is coming out with an expansion. And the expansion for that is called... Oh, Unseen Forces. There we go, Unseen Forces. And that adds new investigators, new ancient ones, a ton of new locations in the museum. It adds blessing dice and adds cursed dice. And it also adds a whole new front door, which is great. Because before it had pretty much just a sheet for the front entrance. Now it has 4 cards at the front entrance that you might want to chill at the front entrance instead of taking down some adventure cards. So something looks really, really good. And that's some stuff that I'm excited for in 2013. Oh, disclaimer. Kemet was actually out last year with in Europe, but it's finally coming over to the States this year. So some people might have actually played this already. I apologize. It's coming out for people who don't want to get it imported this year.
Well, that wraps up the third installment of our podcast. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. If you're interested in participating or have any questions for the cast, feel free to reach us at the Facebook, the Twitter, the Instagram, and the email, cleancutcasual@gmail.com, or come on down to Eastside Games and Cards every single Wednesday. We're always playing card games and board games, and you guys are more than welcome to come and hang out. I'm Ethan Schultz.
Chris Bettinger, a.k.a. Creepy Chris.
Ryan Hicks, a.k.a. AP Chaos.
And David Coppoletti.
Thanks again for listening and have a good night.